It's Friday!
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
America!
Here we go! Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this Friday on the front porch, the last Friday on the front porch of August 2023. This is the 25th day of August 2023. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live. Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between and the great globe round. And whatever time it happens to be where you are when you're listening to the podcast. Hi, I'm Robin. And if you're listening live, well, by all means, pop in over at the aforementioned Merry, Wacky, Zany, etc., and be greeted by the early arrivers and engage in the merry, wacky, zaniness. Let's see. There now. Let me just refresh things to see what stuff is. Yeah. Squeaky and Ralphs are serving as the early arrivers greeting department at this point in time. Don't know if we're going to have a moderator for the chat room. I know Roger's out of pocket on a camping trip, and I know Steve's just been up to his eyeballs, so I don't know what we're going to do about the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, but, you know, we'll figure it out. I can start one now. But we'll see what happens in about an hour or so. But if you're listening to the podcast, pretty please like and subscribe whatever platform you're listening on, you know, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, TuneIn, Podbean. Leave a comment for the algorithms. Tell your friends and neighbors. Because we're witnessing history and doing a damn fine job analyzing it on the fly. It wasn't too long after I closed the program yesterday that the mugshot came out. And it turns out, I can't imagine, but it turns out there were watch parties. I've seen videos of, like, multitudes hanging out in bars, erupting into massive cheers when his mugshot came out. Yeah, and I'm getting ahead of myself, because every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. We'll get back to this. And this program is no different. And so we say thank you to our subscribers for the 25th day of the month. This is a 31-day month, so we'll be running out of subscribers fairly quickly. I think the last one's on maybe the 29th. Thank you. Thank you so much to Charles. Thank you to Peter and Mark. Thanks immensely. And thanks again to Cat in Ohio yesterday with the No Whammy Challenge. Thanks for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep this 20-year-long conversation on the air. It really is quite amazing. It's what Ed Schultz once desultorily referred to as bake sale radio, because I guess if you weren't hustling buy gold now ads and mattresses made of Swedish foam developed for the astronauts by NASA, you weren't doing real radio, and especially not if you didn't have some ads for stupid beats on there. Right, well, somehow we've managed to keep it all going for 20 years, and I'm frankly amazed. So the fundraising goal stands at $1,800. That's Friday of last week, and all of this week remains unfunded, with four more broadcast days in the month, and taken all together, just so that we know what we're looking at. Yes, I know, Kyle. Hi, Kyle. Yes, you're a very good boy. Hi. Yeah, no, you. I know you want to talk, but no, you can't. He's a good boy. But what we're looking at to finish the month, we're a week and a day, we're a broadcast week and a day behind, and we got four more broadcast days coming. So the bottom line is, we are unfunded for a half a month. We are, by the time August 31st gets here, the total between last Friday and then is $3,000. It's a lot. And it's what keeps this all going. So if you can help, please do help. Because, you know, it's how we run this place. And things, I don't know, we rob Peter to pay Paul. Things go undone. Things go unfixed in this, God, let's see, in this 86-year-old ramshackle mansion. This, as George Harrison said, crackerbox palace. But that having been said, that's enough of that. We'll see how it goes. That having been said, there has been much merriment. And much actual, silly as it may seem, analysis of a mugshot. And we had... the end of the program yesterday was just a hoot. Scary Jerry doing man-on-the-street interviews with people who were clueless. Down in South Florida, don't care. Just kind of rollerblading on past or, you know, whatever. But yeah, there were multitudes gathered in humongous sports bars waiting for the release of the mugshot, and thunderous peals of laughter. And it was pretty humorous. And then the serious analysis began. Let me do something here. He's a chatty fellow, Kyle is. But, okay. It went so far as there have been, I've seen him, comparisons. Let's see, Alex from A Clockwork Orange, Vincent D'Onofrio from Full Metal Jacket, Jack Nicholson from, The Shining. Who was the other? Let me check here. I've got the. No, it was from The Shining, dear. Stanley Kubrick directed The Shining. And then, of course, Donald Trump also doing what's known as the Kubrick stare, which Stanley Kubrick used to great effect to show that his characters were at peak maximum nuts. But it's, as someone who in the last 3 years has taken a lot more selfies than she ever did in the before time, Occam's razor shaves mighty close. And there's a far simpler answer for why he's scowling and his brows beetling and oh, scary face.
This is my scary face.
No, he's got his chin dipped like that because he's hiding the other ones. Nitwit Nero has more chins than the Shanghai census, okay? His vanity runs that deep. And, of course, we all know by now, I presume, they were ready. They had the fundraising pitch out and gone within minutes of the mugshot being released. And I presume that the maggots are buying them up. And, well, as Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi once remarked, by their fruits or shirts ye shall know them. But the best part of that shirt is that it's got the mugshot on it, and underneath it, in all caps, in black letters, it says, "Never surrender." The only problem is, that's the photo that was taken when he surrendered to authorities in Fulton County. I guess they know their audience. That's right, Marveline. He should never surrender, especially when he's surrendering to the cops in Fulton County. I know, Emery, I know. He's so brave to surrender that way. Yeah. Now, what's that, Ralph's? Ralph's sending something along from Democratic Underground. I think I've cracked the 215-pound issue. Well, now, to use more English metrics, not metrics, but a more English system, 21 stone, 5 pounds equals 299 pounds. Yes, absolutely. I mean, Muhammad Ali, when he fought Joe Frazier, I think, was 6'3 and 215, and there wasn't an ounce of fat on him. I forget who the photograph was that Stephen New York sent me. Football player. Perfect peak physical condition. I mean, if Nitwit Nero is 215 pounds, it might be in his bra. Because way, way, way long ago, in the before time, I noted that the man in charge of our 52 B-52s had a set of 52 Bs. Probably more like Ds. Well, okay, Asa. More chins than the Shanghai census. I hereby assign you 3 murder hornets in the depths of the hot place for that Shanghai census crack, Kincaid. God, not even a cowbell? I mean, they Nitwit Nero's chins ripple down his neck like the skin on that breed of cat known as that hairless cat known as a sphinx. They ripple down his neck like the skin on a Shar Pei, for God's sakes. Well, I guess Keith Olbermann beat me to it. I didn't see it, but Lee points out that Keith Olbermann said Nitwit Nero angled his head that way to hide his chins. Hi, Keith. Great minds think alike. George and Coarse Gold. Subject line, the glower. He looks like Big Brother from 1984. Ignorance is strength. Well played, George. Well played. And, you know, you come up with things, you think of things after it's too late, but still, some things are enjoyable enough that they're still funny a day later, even if they're... So, from 1928, the one and only Jimmy Rogers, y'all.
I had a friend named Ramblin' Bob, who used to steal, gamble, and rob. He thought he was the smartest guy in town. But I found out last Monday that Bob got locked up Sunday. They've got him in the jailhouse way downtown. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now. Ooh-lay.
Ooh-lay.
Ooh-lay, ooh-lay.
Hee-hee-hee-hee.
Ooh-lay. Called poker, pinochle, whist, and yoker, but shooting dice was his greatest game. Now he's downtown in jail, nobody to go his bail. The judge done said that he refused a fine. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now.
In the jailhouse now.
I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now. Ali-o-le. Ali-o-le. Ali-o-le.
Yeah.
I went out last Tuesday, met a girl named Susie. I told her I was the swellest man around. We started to spend my money, then she started to call me honey. We took in every cabaret in town. We're in the jailhouse now. We're in the jailhouse now.
You know, the fact of the matter is, I've listened to this a couple of times today, and I haven't written one in a long time, but I feel song parody coming on. Might have to tinker with it later after the program. We'll save it for after he's convicted. I knew a guy named Stumbling Don. He used to lie, cheat, and con. He was the biggest liar in the whole darn town. Oh, Robin, it's too early to be singing. We're $1,800 in the hole, $3,000 total. Stop that, Missy. But it's a little bit irresistible, isn't it? And, of course, there's no way that... that man's never seen a Stanley Kubrick film, okay? Just... No.
I've never watched The Clockwork Orange because I don't like being... No orange things.
Meanwhile, over on My Filthy Morning Habit, as expected, The conversation continued to swirl about his self-reported height and weight. And, well, Joe showed up for work for this one.
It was a very sobering moment. I mean, one of the few moments of levity provided by Donald Trump's staff, self-reported weight and height. I've stood next to him many times. I'm about 6'4". Maybe he's 6'1". Maybe he's 6'1½", 6'2". He's a good bit shorter. But his staff reported him at 6'3", and ended a fighting weight of 215. That would be like if my staff reported me. Describe Mr. Scarborough's appearance. He looks a lot like Robert Redford in 1974. wildly off. So I'm not going to tell you where the over under is on Donald Trump's weigh-in, but it's a good let's just say it's a good 70 or 80 pounds higher than what the staff reported. But Willie, I'm sure you would describe me as looking like Robert Redford in about 74. But I don't know about
Coach
Donald
Cassidy,
Trump at 215.
Sundance Kid era. Yeah,
exactly. Right in there. Yes. Yes.
Right in there.
Yes. With or without the mustache, yes.
I like it with the stash. I also like the self-reporting of strawberry blonde hair. I thought that was a nice flourish as well, instead of just saying blonde.
Strawberry blonde.
Yeah. He really went for it. He really went for it. He also...
Blonde, comma,
he also
strawberry.
Used a bail bondsman like anybody else would. Foster's bail bonds in Lawrenceville, Georgia, where you pay 10%. His bond was $200,000. Not sure exactly what he paid, but it was in those ways, that the ways you just described, once you got through the motorcade and he got there, it was pretty quick and routine in the way these things go. I'm curious about trial dates here, Ken, because Kenneth Cheesebrough, one of the co-defendants, an attorney for Donald Trump, put in a motion for a speedy trial, and DA Fani Willis came back and said, sure, how's October 23rd? Let's get this thing going. How do we interpret that move?
Well, that was a be careful what you wish for moment. Fani Willis is ready to go to trial. She's been investigating this thing for 2 years. Presumably, they have not just investigated the case, but prepared their trial strategy, considered their witness list. But here's the thing. Donald Trump is not going to go to trial in October. He's fighting. He doesn't want a speedy trial in this case. And a lot of legal experts I talk to fear that because of the number of defendants in this case in Fulton County, it really could get bogged down. There's a racketeering case that Fani Willis is prosecuting right now where it's taken 8 months and they still haven't picked a jury. Unfortunately, this office doesn't have a great track record of getting cases to trial quickly. And, you know, the lawyers in this one are going to take every opportunity, apparently, except for Mr. Cheesebrough, to slow things down. Because for Mr. Trump, delay is victory. In all these cases, and that's been his strategy. He's just hoping that he can just play this out long enough to somehow get elected president. And even if he can't make this particular Fulton County case go away, there's a good chance that the Justice Department would say you cannot continue with the prosecution of a sitting president. Meanwhile, he could make the other federal cases go away. So, I mean, we've been building towards this moment, but now it's here, right, where the choice for Donald Trump is get elected president or potentially go to prison.
Yeah, this is.
There's one joker in the deck, though. Every time he runs his yap, he probably runs his trial date closer as opposed to pushing it out, because he's jeopardizing the jury pool.
Well, we need a change of venue to, like, Macomb County, Alabama. Wasn't that where that poor Tom Robinson got trialed in that, what was it, Kill Mo Mockingbird?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, hey to Christopher. Christopher said, happy Friday, Horn family. Congratulations out to Jordan Peterson for joining the ranks of infamous doctors who were no longer licensed to practice. Dr. Frankenstein, no longer allowed to practice on living beings. Debatable, I guess. It's alive. Doctor, no longer allowed to give news with regards to loving you. Dr. Dement, wait a minute. Dr. Demento, no longer allowed to practice on the airwaves, ending in 2010. I'll be in listen-only mode today, out hiking around. Well, enjoy your around hiking. And, watch your step. Keep an eye out for snakes and the like. Scary Jerry listening in the jailhouse now. Jimmy Rogers, as you played this song, I imagined the whole horn community dancing like the Peanuts kids on stage in the Christmas Christmas special. Yesterday, Jerry said, was the most fun I've ever had. In the future, I'll be at an actual entertainment center to get takes. That wasn't coffee. That was mania, dopamine, instant oxytocin. I like the chin comment. I'd add more chins than the iPhone 15 factory right before Black Friday. It's a little complex, Jerry. Oh, and by the way, one person is in the joint over all of this. We're talking, about Harrison William Prescott Floyd, a member of Black Voices for Trump, is still cooling his heels in Fulton County because he can't make bail. And well, I guess Trump PAC wasn't there for the Black Voices for Trump. Floyd's a former U.S. Marine, and he's got multiple problems. He got popped 3 months ago in Maryland on a federal warrant that said he aggressively confronted two FBI agents who were sent to serve him with a grand jury subpoena, that he screamed and cursed and jabbed a finger in one FBI agent's face and twice chest-bumped the agent in a stairwell, and he only backed down when the second agent opened his suit coat to reveal his holstered firearm. The presence of a firearm does have a sobering effect. And he's got exposure in the Fulton County case. The records disclose no pettifogger for what's his name? Harrison William Prescott Floyd. Wait, Harrison Floyd? Perilously close to Harrison Ford. So, no lawyer. But he was one of the ones who apparently, allegedly, engaged in witness intimidation against Ruby Freeman, the Fulton County election worker who has since lived her life in fear. Also turning himself in today was another of those dirtbags who allegedly intimidated Ms. Freeman. That would be Pastor Stephen Lee, a Lutheran pastor from Illinois. His mugshot. Well, he showed up for his mugshot wearing his clerical collar. Lock him up. Lock him up. And he does have a pettifogger who has complained bitterly that this is a poor, humble servant of Jesus Christ, and he doesn't have $80,000 for bail. Not one individual noting Thank God he wore his collar today. No one's ever suspicious of priests in this day and age. What did he do? Well, he's charged along with Trevion Coody, who once a PR agent who once represented who was it, R. Kelly, and Harrison Floyd. The allegation goes that Lee paid a surprise visit to Ruby Freeman's home in mid-December 2020. Police body cam footage recorded Lee acknowledging he'd knocked on her door and offered to provide pro bono service to her. And he asked Floyd to set up a meeting with Ruby Freeman to discuss an immunity deal in exchange for a false admission of committing election fraud. If you recall the old Kevin Costner movie, The Untouchables, there's a passage in there how he talks about how the ancient Romans, well, there she goes, would take someone suspected of accepting bribes and put them in a big sack with a fox and throw them in the Tiber River. The fox and the dirty politician would both be alive. Usually the fox got the better of things. I wonder if the Lutheran Synod has gotten around to defrocking this fucker. Probably not. And of course, the whole tableau would not be half as delightful had Dark Brandon not gotten involved. Some journalist couldn't resist sticking a microphone in his face and asking him about the mugshot.
Have you seen Donald Trump's mugshot yet?
He laughs.
Are you worried at all about that?
I did see it on television.
What'd you think?
Handsome guy. Wonderful guy.
Handsome guy. Wonderful guy. I love the meme that has Trump, that has Biden remark. Trump keeps saying he wants to see me in prison. Why does he think I'd visit him in prison? I don't think I've ever experienced a breadth and depth of schadenfreude, anything like this. It's the fun may continue through the weekend and into next week. And remember, this being the 25th, let's see, 11, so that's 30, 53, 52, 59 days until the trial of Kenneth Cheesebro starts. I think we kind of need a derp vent calendar for that or something. I guess we have to mention the fact that Marginal Trailer Queen had to get in on the act. Over at CNN early this morning, they invited former Georgia State Senator Jen Jordan on to chat with Poppy Harlow and Victor Blackwell. And she wasted no time going after Marge.
Terrible experience, Reddy. And Jen, I'll bring that to you. I want you to listen to what the former president said about while he was there at Rice Street. And then we'll talk about contrasting that with the experience of some of the people he targeted over these last several years. Let's play it.
Terrible experience. I came in, I was treated very nicely, but no, it is what it is. I took a mugshot, which I never heard the words mugshot. That wasn't, didn't teach me that at the Wharton School of Finance. And I have to go through a process.
Love that part.
It's election interference.
He was in and out in 20 minutes. But if you contrast that with some of the people he focused on, the individuals, Ruby Freeman, Shay Moss, mm-hmm. over the last several years, who said that they could not go to grocery stores. They were afraid to go out. People came to their homes. What do you hear there in the president's description of his experience?
I just don't think he gets it. And I think, you know, when we see the Marjorie Taylor Greene MAGA mugshot, there seems to be a real disconnect from reality. Look, Rice Street is a jail that is awful.
No question.
People are dying there because the conditions are so absolutely deplorable. So the fact that he basically got this great treatment, he comes in 20 minutes, in and out, right, done and done, and somehow that was awful and bad, when the reality is people that get booked every day there and that have their mugshots taken and that actually have to be in jail there, this is very, very serious. Yeah. And so, you know, for all of these people doing these MAGA mugshots, for whatever reason they're doing it, they just have no understand what this really stands for. I mean, this is not good, right? He is in significant legal trouble. And so whether he thinks this is more of a political thing that he needs to massage or not, as a lawyer, he needs to stand down and really focus on his defense, because he is facing serious allegations that could end him up with serious time in prison. And that mugshot's not going to really mean anything at the end of the day if he's locked up.
Can I just ask, because you know Georgia so well, if Trump is convicted on these charges in state court, if it doesn't get removed to federal, would he go to that jail first?
Yes.
He was in last
night. He would be held there until they send him to whatever prison he is then assigned to. If he got jail time.
Thank you.
Our Fulton County's district attorney.
One just point of order. They talk about jail time. Maybe it's a distinction without a difference. I don't think it is. Jail time is what you get when you go to jail. You know, the old G-A-O-L, if you want to get all old English about it. And jail time is what you get when you're doing less than a year on a misdemeanor in a county, or like in West Virginia, in a regional jail. What he's facing, let's be clear, is hard prison time. I know next to nothing about the prison system of the Department of Corrections, or whatever they call it in Georgia. I'm on record as saying that I would prefer for him to go and be cellmates with the three white supremacists who murdered Ahmaud Arbery. He could tell them what very fine people they are. I don't know if there are any, you know, Club Georgia's minimum security facility. I don't know. But it's prison time, not jail time. But I'm finicky that way, so, you know.
But they never taught me about mugshots at the Wharton School of Business.
Remember, there was a professor there who said he was the dumbest human being he had ever actually had to teach. Of which I have no doubt. And I find it difficult to believe that he had no idea of what a mugshot was. I mean, did he never see the mugshot of, I don't know, Jared Kushner's daddy? Oh, Jack Smith may have had a hand in putting away. Am I misremembering? But anyway, how about, you know, he cackled merrily over the mugshot of Michael Cohen. any pardon file for all Paul Manafort or Roger Stone, would most Steve, the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, Stevie Three Shirts, that would have, there would have been mugshots there.
I don't know what a mugshot is.
Lee in New York adding, so he never heard of a mugshot. He also obviously never heard of the right to remain silent. Adding, does the ketchup-coiffed staring one expect Hillary to visit him? He kept saying she would go to jail. Hey, thanks, Henry. Henry, thank you so much for getting us started on fundraising this evening. We do so appreciate it. So that gets us down to $17.75. Thank you. Was the month of April in 1775 and hardly a man. Yeah, never mind. Scary Jerry says, Black Voices for Trump, the historic Black Bookie and Historical Handicapping Association, all further bets on blacks for Trump, and that's the first going to jail and he ain't getting the bail. They are now closed. Thank you for your patronage. Okie doke. But no, Marge is now out there, and other maggots as well, reproducing Fulton County mugshots of themselves. I wish I was joking. I'm not. And meanwhile, Jim Jacket Off Jordan, well, he's going after Fonnie Willis now. Jim Jacket Off Jordan has no authority, no business saying, this is a complicated legal term, dick about Fonnie Willis's prosecution, the state of Georgia's prosecution of Jim Jacket Off Jordan's God Emperor. Jim Jacket Off Jordan is probably still shitting himself, wondering during which trial his name's going to come up. But Jim Jacket Off Jordan has promised that he's going to have a full inquiry and he's going to investigate Fonnie Willis for the weaponization of Fulton County? Jacket Off saying, the indictment and prosecution implicate substantial federal interests, and the circumstances surrounding your actions raise serious concerns about whether they are politically motivated. I want your entire damn file, and I want to know your trial strategy and your witness list. It may come as a complete surprise to Jim Jacket Off Jordan, but federal prosecutors and state-level prosecutors coordinate all the time to make sure that they don't step on each other's jurisdiction or get in each other's way. And I think Jim Jacket Off Jordan is going to find himself severely overmatched in trying to mess around with Fonnie Willis. This is a woman who graduated from Howard University and then graduated from Emory Law School, which is not exactly the draw-the-pirate matchbook law school that Jim Jacket Off Jordan went to. So, you know, knock yourself out, Jim. Note coming in from Jessica up in the Greater Rochester Metropolitan Co-Prosperity Sphere. Pastor Lee, the Lutheran man of God who was trying to intimidate Ruby Freeman, Which Lutheran group for Lee? Wisconsin Synod, Missouri Synod? Both are almost as conservative as the Baptist Church, so good luck on defrocking. Evangelical Lutheran Church in America? This is the denomination I was raised in and is a little conservative, but more open-minded and progressive than the evangelical moniker suggests. Elka, Jessica says, is the best shot for a proper defrocking. Put him in the defrocking machine and defrock him for a while. There's a poison that enters people's brains and bloodstreams that makes them do horrid things. I was about to say, geez, the guy's a priest, but does that even mean anything in 2023, honestly? Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, there is no bottom. Trump is already selling merchandise with his mugshot to raise funds for campaign. Keep raising the money, Donnie. It all may wind up in Fonnie Willis's treasury. Or the state of Georgia's. And it's not just t-shirts, it's mugs and koozies and bumper stickers. They went on sale about 90 minutes after he was released from an Atlanta jail. $34 shirts.
Never surrender.
And by the way, the $20,000, he doesn't get that back. I don't think. That's gone money. And that's why he didn't put up his own, assuming he had $200,000 laying around. Because once the state of Georgia has that money, if there's a conviction, the money will just go toward the fine.
Please make a contribution of $47 to prove that you will also never surrender our mission, and we'll send you a free t-shirt with President Trump's official mugshot printed on it.
Oh, it's like a weed store in D.C. They don't actually sell weed. You buy a t-shirt from them, and they give you some weed as a way of saying thank you. It's the same thing, only in reverse. Jack in Shreveport, mugshots. The maggots that got the Georgia mugshots got the privilege of not having their hands cuffed behind their backs and then having a cop's hand mess with their hair as they get in the back of a cop car and then waiting for hours before a photo's taken. Those cuffs don't lend themselves very well at all to undoing their hair and checking their makeup. Oh, and God, whoever put it on him last night put it on with a trowel. Kushner connection. Clarence says Chris Christie was involved in the prosecution of Kushner Sr. Harrison Floyd is living out that two-tier justice system in real time. No money, no clout, no release. Wonder who's listening to that black voice for Trump. Indeed, Clarence, indeed. Dave in the Blind, Mr. Floyd. Harrison Floyd is ashamed to his family, especially his young child, Pink. Oh, Dave. Gunner. In jail without a lawyer, singing everyone's Patrick incarceration song, pro se, can you see? That's two in one, okay. You get a cowbell, Dave. Pro se, can you see? Dave remains irrepressible. And the problems continue to mount for Jeffrey Clark, the guy who dreamed of being Attorney General of the United States and overthrowing the Constitution. He made bail, Jeffrey Clark did. But now he's got to hot-foot it back to D.C. because he has disciplinary proceedings to attend. He asked the court to pause the disciplinary proceedings while he dealt with his criminal matter. That wheedling plea was rejected by a federal judge that said the court principally held that Mr. Clark had not established that the federal officer removal statute provides jurisdiction to remove the board's disciplinary proceeding or the board's action to enforce a subpoena issued pursuant to that proceeding to federal court. More specifically, the court found that the board's disciplinary proceeding was neither a civil action nor a criminal prosecution, as those terms are used in the removal statutes, and therefore that federal jurisdiction did not lie over its removal. And so he got shut down every which way from Sunday. Wouldn't happen to a nicer guy, or less criminal one. Oh, and by the way, Pastor Lee, yeah, he's a former police chaplain. Presently, he's the pastor at a church in Missouri. Does that mean he's Missouri Synod, Jessica? I don't know. Charged in RICO, also charged with two counts of criminal intent to commit influencing witnesses. His pettifogger, a guy named David Shistokas, said,
I think that's an excessive bond. He's a pastor. These are not folks that do things to get wealthy.
No one's accusing him of doing something to get wealthy. He's accused of tampering with a woman whose only fault lay with the fact that she wanted to do her civic duty and serve as a poll worker.
Well, there's no reason to believe he's a flight risk. I advised him that he's not a wealthy man and wouldn't be able to make bond.
Well, darn. Find me the world's smallest violin. Let's look around a little bit and get away from some of this. According to the Associated Press, a maggot is headed off to prison for 2 years after he made threats to kill Democratic Senator John Teaster of Montana. He got 2.5 years federal time. Kevin Patrick Smith left a phone message saying that he was going to rip the head off of Senator Teaster and doubled down in the messages and said, I'm doing all this on purpose. But he's a white guy, so the FBI just showed up on February 1st and said, hey, stop that. Stop doing that. But then on February the 11th, he started up with the threatening phone calls again. And this time they actually arrested him. 11 days after that, on February 22nd. And he'd been doing it since late 2022. Maggot's gonna MAGA. It's just who they are. Nitwit Nero, having had his account restored at that site formerly known as Twitter, run by derpy Batman villain Leon Scum, well, he returned to Twitter to do what? To post his mugshot and try to fundraise on his own cupidity. I try to get away from it and just get sucked right back in. earlier today, speaking to Chris Jansen, presidential historian, Michael Beschloss took his turn trying to explain why Nitwit Nero looked like he did in his photograph. I mean, he could have done the Mussolini thing with the out-jutting chin, but then people would have had to play which chin is he jutting out. But, okay, Michael Beschloss is a smart guy.
Well, I thought it was, as with most things Trump does, carefully staged. They must have thought about what look they wanted. He could have smiled. He could have looked benign. Instead, he looks like a thug.
That's John Bornstash Bolton.
And I think it's intended to be a sign of intimidation against the prosecutors and judges.
Joining me now, NBC News presidential historian Michael Beschloss. You know, Michael, every time we talk lately, it's another first. This time, right. It's a former president's mugshot. What goes through your mind when you look at it?
When I look at it, I would agree with what John Bolton said in the video that you just had, and that is that Trump does not do things like this by accident. I would bet that he has been spending a lot of time in front of a mirror, maybe even on that plane that flew down from Newark to Atlanta before he went to Fulton County Jail. And, you know, everything is for a purpose. He felt that this look on his face would help him raise money. It makes him look as if he's beleaguered and angry and also a very tough guy. And this is the guy who has said in recent months to his crowds, I am your retribution, who has said on social media, you come after me, I will come after you. This all goes together. So if Trump is trying to intimidate, you know, a judge or a district attorney or members of a grand jury or others or politicians who might fly away from his support, the best way, just given the way his mind works, is for them to be scared of him, and particularly scared of the possibility that he might get elected president late next year and may be there for 4 years or conceivably even more than that.
So if he's using it, and Donald Trump has shown his ability to do that, Susan Glasser in The New Yorker writes, for now, Trump sees only political gain and, quite possibly, the specter of a historic self-pardon in that snarly snapshot from the Fulton County Jail. How does this consistent idea that he's used the highest office in the land, his post-presidency, a candidacy as a platform, sometimes for not the best things, get judged by history?
No. Yeah, absolutely right. You know, when in history have we ever seen anyone use the presidency in this way to make money, to let members of his family make money, to try to elevate his profile, to help himself later on? You know, thoroughly in sync, just as you're saying, Chris, with this idea that he is running for the presidency largely so that if he gets elected, he can try to destroy the Justice Department, as he's pledged to do, and destroy our rule of law, and intimidate people who he thinks have wronged him throughout his life, and particularly in this episode. I'll say with the greatest understatement I can possibly use that this may not have been exactly what the founders of our country intended the presidency to be used for.
So Trump has...
understatement of the year, not how the presidency was supposed to roll. The idea, though, that he spent a bunch of time in front of a mirror working on that scowl with that beetled furrow straight up and down in his, oh, I forget what the, you know, there by his eyebrow. Yeah, maybe he... It's all just so laughably pitiful. On, you know, the clouds may have parted and some bright light of day come glaring through onto the noggin of Squidney Powell. We've talked for a while now about the fact that it looks like she may well be the target of their attempts to seek a patsy. Well, the lights, like I said, the light's gone on. Because guess who the latest to request a speedy trial is? Yeah, according to Tamar Hallerman in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, who reviewed court filings from today, Squidney Powell has requested formally and officially a speedy trial. I presume that Judge McAfee will say, cool, you get October 23rd too. So that's Cheeseboro and the Sidney Powell. Meanwhile, Nitwit Nero doesn't want a trial anytime between now and when the sun burns out. Greg Bluestein over at the AJC said precisely what Trump's defense team doesn't want, to speed up the proceedings. But she may be getting out in front of them. It may screw up their ability to pin it all on her. Or she may plead out and, you know, roll on him. He's been paranoid all along. You know, for years we've seen him talk about how he wants absolute loyalty, and no one will ever roll on him. Of course, the number of people who have rolled on him already is already fairly lengthy and growing longer by the day. Matt in San Francisco,
never surrender.
Selling a shirt with your surrender photo over the words never surrender is classic 45. The only thing worse is buying one and wearing it with pride. Oh, wait. No wonder the French hate us. It reminds me of that line that Keeley says in Ted Lasso speaking to Rebecca. You're fucking amazing. Let's invade France. So something's going to happen on October 23rd, 59 days from now. And it'll be here before we know it. Some other stuff. Let's go down the takes, shall we? There's a company in Texas called TNT Crane and Rigging. It's a crane company. I'm not talking about the birds. And because we have a Democrat in the White House who takes things like labor law and discrimination seriously, well, the U.S., remember, Fappy Thomas once headed the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. You can imagine what a shell of itself it was during those years when old 666 Ronald Wilson Reagan put him in that seat. Of course, that's before he became dear, dear friends with Har Har. But never mind. TNT Crane and Rigging has been sued by the EEOC because, according to the EEOC, TNT Crane and Rigging engaged in a pattern of racial discrimination and harassment. What form did the harassment take? Here we are. They openly displayed nooses and white supremacy symbols and verbally abused and used racial slurs at the four individuals. A press release from EEOC said the EEOC also charged the company, which has over 40 branches in the United States and Canada, with retaliating against a white employee for raising allegations of race-based discrimination at its Fort Worth branch. The employee reported the racial discrimination and harassment, which included a noose in the workplace, to multiple levels of management and HR, but the company took no effective action, according to the EEOC. EEOC lawyer Robert Canino seemed somewhat dismayed. You'd think after 60 years of statutory protections of federal anti-discrimination laws, we could have moved far beyond the grim and hate-fueled threat messages of nooses and Nazi symbols. And then lawyer Canino engaged in a little bit of wishcraft. The U.S. courts, however, remain an effective forum by which we can educate the public and ensure compliance through monetary and injunctive remedies. In a federal court in Texas? Mr. Canino? Really? Well, I guess you have to kind of say those things when you're in that position. While we're at it, the Department of Justice has filed a lawsuit against Leon Scum and his dick rocket factory, SpaceX. The DOJ accuses SpaceX of engaging in discriminatory practices against asylum seekers and refugees. Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark said, "Our investigation found that SpaceX failed to fairly consider or hire asylees and refugees because of their citizenship status and imposed what amounted to a ban on their hire regardless of their qualification in violation of federal law. Our investigation also found that SpaceX recruiters and high-level officials took actions that actively discouraged asylees and refugees from seeking work opportunities at the company." Now, that sounds positively Trumpian. With their little color-coded files for who they'd rent, who he and his Klansman daddy would rent to and who they wouldn't. From September 2018 to May 2022, SpaceX discouraged asylum seekers and refugees from seeking jobs there. SpaceX wrongly claimed that under federal regulations known as export control laws, SpaceX could only hire U.S. citizens and lawful permanent residents, sometimes referred to as green card holders. Export control laws impose no such hiring restrictions. So the DOJ is going to look for back pay for asylum seekers and refugees who can prove that they were deterred or denied for seeking employment at SpaceX. Asylees and refugees have overcome many obstacles in their lives, and unlawful employment discrimination based on their citizenship status should not be one of them. Through this lawsuit, we will hold SpaceX accountable for its illegal employment practices and seek relief that allows asylees and refugees to fairly compete for job opportunities and contribute their talents to SpaceX's workforce. Is anyone surprised? I can't tell you the number of references I've seen from cranky maggots addressing Leon Scum saying, it's so good to see an African-American thriving in American business. I'll be so glad when he builds a big enough dick rocket to get him to his beach house on Mars. Oh, and thank you. Thank you so very kindly to Manuel. Manuel just took us down to 1770. Thank you so much. It's great to hear from you. We are past the top of the second hour of the program, 10 minutes in. And I guess it's time for me to see if there's anybody interested in a Friday on the front porch, or if this is just going to be another monumental filibuster. My God, Brother Deacon. The Herman Cain 999 sexual harassment plan. Settle any sexual harassment lawsuit now and get a free pizza. Yeah. All right. I'm going to hit the magic button and see if we can get a little conversation started. And there we go. Okay, there's Squeaky. Yeah, we're not going to get Roger. I don't know why Sparky was on that list. There's Kevin. All right, give up on Roger. There we go. Okay, well, I guess it's me and four others. Hey, gang.
Testing, can you hear?
Yeah, hey, Kevin.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, you know what I was thinking about this week?
What?
With Mike Pence. I don't know if this was ever talked about or, I mean, it's just something I thought about after, I mean, like right after January 6th. If he thought about it, which I don't, he had the political capital of what? I mean, he probably could, if he played his cards right, he could have rolled to the top.
You're right. But that would require some moral fiber on his part, and not just hypocritical, evangelical posturing.
Well, that's the main right. So, but just saying, I mean, he could have just said, literally. I mean, I don't want to physically, but he could have just walked into McConnell's office and said, "Look, MF-er, your boy just tried to have me killed and my family. So guess what? Guess who's calling the shots now? It's me. So I'm going to go out to the public and, you know, and I'm sure people would have got, independents would have probably got behind him. And he might have even swayed some people right there, you know, right next to McConnell's office. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about Rand Paul or any other, you know, jerks, but
weirdos
probably could have got right. Probably could have got, you know, the ones that were afraid to say anything. So I'm just, this all, of course, wild speculation. But, you know, he could have really, and then ultimately, of course, and I'll end it with this, the second impeachment, I mean, it would have been a no-brainer.
Well, let me add something to that, Kevin. What he could have done on January 7th, yep. Even though there was only 13 days remaining in the presidency, it still would have meant something. He could have done something that over the course of those ensuing 4 years that we had talked about frequently here on this program, he, as Vice President of the United States, could have called the cabinet together and said, look, let's write that 25th Amendment letter I'll be president until January the 20th, and Trump can fuck off into outer space.
Yep.
Because what is it? Two thirds of the cabinet. It's been a while since I looked at it.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I mean, remember Elaine Chao got all she got all morally righteous and found her conscience for the first time in her entire life.
Yep.
Well, instead of who's flushing on air? Stop that. That's just stop. That was gross. I'm just looking up 25th Amendment. Scary Jerry, that's you. Quit it. I don't think scared. Anyway, I'm looking up the 25th Amendment. Section 4. It has been a while. Whenever the vice president and a majority, it's not even two-thirds, a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of other such body as Congress may by law provide, Congress never has, so it's a majority of the cabinet, transmit to the president pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House and of Representatives their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the office as acting president.
You know, they would have had to shift it over, but you know what? It wouldn't have lasted long, I think.
Well, I mean, there's an entire mechanism there for the president to transmit to the president pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives his written declaration that no inability exists. He shall resume the powers and duties of his office unless the vice president and majority of either principal officers of the executive department or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit within 4 days, yada, yada, yada. Well, at that point in time, the president pro tem of the Senate was DiFi? And the Speaker of the House was Nancy Pelosi? He could have, you're right, it's a very astute observation, Kevin. He could have been a hero. But instead he elected to be a zero.
Man, he could have just like, look, you know, look, and everybody, it's like, it's not like it would, that happened and we all saw it happen. We all saw it happen, okay? Everybody knows it happened, and he could have said, hey, this is enough. I mean, enough of this crap. I mean, you know, with his connections as a vice president, he could have made life absolutely miserable for Donald Trump in the ensuing days. And then, you know, and then starting January 21st, he could have just went after him like, you know, just made life absolutely miserable for the guy. But I think leading up to that second impeachment, that would have been a
okay,
slam
dunk. Okay, but Kevin, let's deal with the political realities on the ground. And by the way, thank you, George and Coarse Gold. George and Coarse Gold, thank you so much. You just got us down to 17:45. Thank you so very much. I'm sorry, Kevin. Go ahead. I need to figure out some way to.
He probably, and ultimately he would be a very good candidate for president right now in 2024. Probably would have a lot of the independents, not a lot, but maybe a good portion of them. And I think he would have been a viable candidate, you know, if he did all that.
But what I was going to say is you also have to take into account that remember January 6th, they brought a gallows and were running around singing, "We'll hang Mike Pence from the sour apple tree," okay?
Yeah.
One of those maggots, and they were still feeling plenty froggy on January 7th and all the way to the 20th. and after, as we found out, one of those maggots might have murdered him. And don't think that wasn't in the back of his, or back my ass, it was in the front of his mind. Because he had to run for his life.
Yeah.
From other Republicans on January the 6th. I think we kind of blow past that a lot, Kevin.
Yeah, we do.
Other Republicans. He wasn't being chased by Antifa or Black Lives Matter.
No. What I'm hoping comes out in all these investigations is the plotters, because remember they said that there are a lot of Republican Congress people, you know, casing the joint, so to speak, for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, showing everybody where to go and all the tunnels and this and that. And, you know, I personally think everybody that didn't vote to certify the election should be, and Roger, I know Roger said it too, you know, should be out enough, you know, should be disqualified. But anyway, I'm just going to shut off the car. I'm going to unplug my phone and I'll catch up with you guys. All right.
Okay.
All right. I'll be back in a minute.
Okay. Right. Thanks, Kevin.
Yep.
That's a good topic to get us started this evening.
Don't the members of the cabinet have to be confirmed, and most of them were standbys waiting to be confirmed, so the number could have been smaller.
Well, no, this is still the Trump cabinet. On January 6, 2021, or January 7th.
Yes, but...
Some had bailed, but yeah, it arguably would have been a smaller number, although, you know, acting might count. There's nothing in the 25th Amendment that addresses that.
That might indicate, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, hey, Ken.
Yeah, that might indicate that you said earlier Mike Pence wanted it to happen. Is why he was conversing with the other jagoff. How could he make it happen? But he figured he'd bail on the whole thing. You know,
well, no, he
get out of it.
When the rubber met the road, he's a lawyer. Pence is. Trump is not. And Trump was just talking out his ass, saying anything that he thought would keep him in office because he already knew how deep his exposure was. Maybe on other issues, but. Again, it's all, you know, what Watergate taught us. It's not the substantive crime. It's the cover up. And so the cover up began via the January 6th domestic terror attack. But Pence is a lawyer, and he knew that he knew that the function he was to play in the Senate was purely what's referred to legally as purely magisterial. In other words, it didn't call for any exercise of discretion or any exercise of real power. He was there to bang a gavel and yell Holly Smoot, okay, if that makes any sense.
It does, but how long had he been listening to Eastman, you know, the crazy guy with the... See, Pence is a Christian, so he's a crazy guy, right? And maybe he really thought that he could make it happen, but he bailed at the end. So well, that's my theory anyway. And I'm sorry about the call the other night. I was...
What are you sorry for? You were fine.
Yeah, I sounded like an idiot.
No, you didn't. No, you did not.
Okay. All right. Well, I was kind of shit-faced, and I should adopt your platitudes of not being medicated on air.
You didn't sound medicated. It's okay.
Okay. I hope not.
You did not. You were fine. Let me have a quick look here. Yeah, I saw this earlier today. A tax lawyer in Palm Beach County, Florida, has actually filed suit in federal court for the Southern District of Florida, you know, Alien Cannon's district. But she's not the only judge there. Citing the disqualification clause of the 14th Amendment, demanding that Donald Trump not be allowed on the ballot. And apparently, not just limited to Florida, but nationwide. So that's telling.
It's
interesting, too.
Going to be straight to the court, right? So we're going to have that wind up.
Gavin Newsom in California has also directed the California legislature, I believe, to consider the 14th Amendment's disqualification clause and the assertion that it is self-executing. To keep Trump off the ballot in California. That would be a huge, because even though, you know, California should ostensibly go to a Democrat, there are millions of maggots in California. And for him to not even be able to be on the ballot, and then there's another open question of if people write his name in, does that get counted? It's a fascinating concept.
Yeah, and the Never Trumpers and the, like the Lincoln Project, they're pumping money on this that amendment clause. They want them out too, right? Republicans.
Well, the Never Trumpers obviously do. It's the fact that a pair of law professors who are members of the Federalist Society, not known as a den of liberalism, have written a really nerdy law review article saying that he's already disqualified. He's self-disqualified.
You think they already know that they lost this next election?
Well, they haven't. The next election, they haven't lost it.
No, they haven't.
I can't fathom, because it's one of those things that just makes your head hurt. You know, this morning as I was watching my Filthy Morning Habit, somebody said, "Well, you know, hey, he could run for president from prison just like Eugene V. Debs." And all the little hairs stood up on the back of my neck, and I went, no! No, hell no! Don't you dare compare Donald Trump to Eugene V. Debs. Eugene V. Debs was legitimately a political prisoner. He was imprisoned for speaking out against the First World War. He was imprisoned because he was a socialist. And yes, he, up until, I guess, maybe Ross Perot or John Anderson, he was the largest, he got more votes as a third-party presidential candidate than any other candidate in American history. But the fact of the matter is, there is a comparison to be made with a jailbird running for president, and it's much more accurate and much more apt. And that's Lyndon LaRouche.
Oh, God.
You remember Lyndon LaRouche, Ken?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Guy was crazier in the head than the hog is in the ass. And he had a full-on cult. I've said before, I used to run across some LaRouches when we'd be working in D.C. And for about 2.8 seconds, they'd sound like they were rational. And then they'd say, Lyndon LaRouche. And you knew you were dealing with a crazy person. And he was a perennial presidential candidate. And oddly enough, he started out far left in the 70s and eventually went full circle and found himself on the far right.
Yeah, first full circle, and exactly right, full circle. He went to the left, he went to the sovereign citizen side.
And he's a nut job.
You know, for some reason, you were talking about LaRouche, and I thought about Bud Dwyer.
Oh, God, there's a name I hadn't thought of.
Last Friday, you were talking about Pennsylvania history, and then I thought about Bud Dwyer sticking a pistol in his mouth and
killing himself on live TV.
Yeah, that was pretty traumatic. I was a little kid. I'm sure you were pretty little then too, right? You're only like 3 years older than me.
Right.
Wow. That broke up the conversation, but I'm all about tangents. I go on tangents.
This is a 20-year tangent. Who are you talking to?
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah, you're really good at that, and Well, bless you, honey. You taught me a lot. I'm so happy to be part of this community. Words are failing me now.
You're fine.
I've always been so damn nervous talking to like a group of people. I know there's other people listening. I like sound like it.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to work. It's just a conversation. Yeah. This is not, and other people respond to the conversations as they see fit.
But it's still like public speaking. And that's, one of the biggest fears. Or having dreams about missing a class for a whole semester.
Those are nightmares.
We all have them. It's a very common thing. Where's Scary Jerry? He's tapping into dreams, but...
Scary Jerry was here, but he was flushing the toilet on air, and then he left.
Oh. Why the hell was he doing that?
Oh, just probably just not, between. Not particularly tapped into the moment. By the way, I got to say hi to Tamara because Tamara said, I love it when Ken calls in. Barbie voice. Hi, Ken.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you.
The difference between us, Ken, is I actually did skip AP history for about a semester in high school. My senior year still passed it. I didn't dream about skipping it. I fucking did it.
I didn't care in high school. It's more college related. And
I didn't care in high school. That's why I'm a janitor now. But I do pretty well, so I'm not complaining. I got lucky, but that's why I do what I do. It's not because I'm highly educated. I'm just well listened to people.
You are, Jeremy, what is called an autodidact. So was Mark Twain, so you're in good company.
Or audiophile. That's what I really am more than anything.
Yeah, Jeremy, I learned way more in class by voice. And Robin, like, years ago, that's where they passed down knowledge. It was through voice, not through written words. I'm reading.
Right. Those. I mean, there's some research out there that suggests that pre-literate humans had a vastly more well-developed sense of memorization.
Does that make me a caveman?
Oh, no. I mean, we're no. Oof. No.
Well, some people learn better by listening and doing themselves than having someone like reading from a book. It's a known fact. And actually, I heard something last night which kind of shocked me. I didn't really realize this, but I guess I should have. And this would be something close to you, Robin. It's the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum.
Oh, goodness gracious, yes.
I heard that back in the day, they put people in there with learning disabilities because they considered them mentally ill.
Sure. Anybody who was not deemed normal was Abby.
Well, I would have been in there for several reasons, let alone my learning disabilities. But dear God, I didn't realize I was in that group of people at that time. So it was a wake-up experience, I guess, for me.
The early psychology days is barbaric.
Well, if you have ever seen, and I'm trying to think, it may have. I think it was on Cinemax. It might be more broadly available now. Clive Owen, two seasons, I think, called The Nick, K-N-I-C-K. It was shot down in Lower Manhattan. The costumes, the scenery, the attention to detail of, you know, 1902 New York, absolutely captivating. But it centers on a facility that in the story is called the Knickerbocker Hospital. And Clive Owen plays a physician, a rather forward-thinking one, although he has a lot of problems. And there's a subplot through there of a woman who loses her baby and subsequently, postpartum, loses her mind. And we're talking about psychiatry in 1902, 1904, what have you. And a lot of this was based, a lot of the script writing was based on legitimate research of the time. Tara Devlin told me about it, you know, Tara Buster. And I was hooked. Annette and I both were. But this one woman who loses her mind in grief. In order to deal with her madness, the psychiatry of the day said that, well, first they pulled all her teeth, and I think eventually they cut out her tongue.
Oh, man.
As psychiatric treatment for mental illness.
It's Jordan Peterson, that crazy fuck.
And suddenly we find ourselves back with Lobster Daddy. Yes, the man who wants to reorder human society based on how male lobsters behave.
He's a whiny little bitch.
Yeah, well, he is that.
Excuse my French. I don't want to use that.
But you'd be surprised how many young men there are out there who think that he is the shining star of masculinity and what it means to be a man.
Good Lord. That's retarded.
Well, let's not use that word, Ken, but yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. But it's a form of regressive barbarity. You know, Jordan Peterson says we'd all be ever so much better off if we were running around fat-shaming people and, well, I don't know, putting people like me in lunatic asylums.
Yeah.
And y'all, you know, people tune into this program and have for 20 years, then I'm pretty sane. You know,
absolutely sane.
If we understand that normal is only a setting on a dryer.
Yeah.
But I've been who I am the entire 20 years. It's the fact that I came out 3 years ago that makes it, well, I just finally decided to live my life in full. But yeah, and there's another there's another story out there, and this one kind of hit hard. It's Friday. We can talk about these things, can't we? I hope everybody's not going, oh, she's talking about the trans shit. I'm leaving.
You talk about it.
I've been a fan of Carlos Santana as long as I've known there was a Carlos Santana to be a fan of. The first time I ever heard the live version of Europa, Earth's Cry, Heaven's Smile from the live album Moonflower, it was one of the most beautiful things I had ever heard in my life. It's an instrumental, there's no vocals, and he just makes his guitar bawl, cry, scream. Back when I thought that I would like to just be able to noodle around on a guitar once in a while, I actually learned to play the opening lick of that song, and it was one of the most uplifting things. It's like, oh, I'm doing it. I taught it to Ferg. Let me see if I can call it up real quick, just because, I mean, there is a story that goes with all of this.
Well, I know the drum parts and the percussion parts, so go ahead.
Really?
Yeah.
To Europa?
Yeah. That was when I learned to play percussion for the funk band. That was one of the songs that I practiced.
Oh, wow!
Get my mindset out of.
I'm just gonna play that little bitty opening lick because it's just. Yeah. I mean, doesn't that just go through you? I mean, doesn't that just reach into your soul? I mean, it's magic.
I
cry sometimes. Back when I couldn't cry, I would cry sometimes hearing that. It's just so profound. And Jesus Christ, the sustain and that Hammond B3 there in the background,
that's music to me.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I guess it was last month. He played a gig in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And. It's inexplicable. Guess I'm gonna have to call this up.
This is not going.
No. Some of these things. What's next? Jimmy Buffett comes out in favor of bathroom bans. God.
He always sucked anyway.
Damn. Let me look this up so I can get... John in Central PA sent this one along. And... You know, Santana's always been kind of a head case, but I really had a lot of respect for him. I think it was back in the 90s he came out and said that he was sexually abused as a child, and it's like, well, damn, that took guts.
Was it fake?
No.
Okay.
But you'll be interested. you know, I take those little polls that appear at the end of these news stories now and then. I went through this one. Do you think Carlos Santana's comments about trans people were inappropriate or not? 31%, yes, I think so. 61%, no, I don't think so. Fact. I don't know if he was high. I don't know. I mean, you know, he's an old dude. What?
A religious dude.
He went through this whole spiritual thing. Well, anyway, so what he does is, in the middle of his set, he stops and says, when God made you and me, before we came out of the womb, you know who you are and what you are. Later on, when you grow out of it, you see things and you start believing that you could be something that sounds good, but you know it ain't right. Because a woman is a woman and a man is a man. Well, thank you, Carlos. I'm a woman. That's it. Whatever you want to do in the closet, that's your business. I'm okay with that. And then he held his hands together and said, I'm like this with my brother Dave Chappelle.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And he has caught himself, he has put himself in an absolute shitstorm. And so now, well, first he issued an apology. And then he promptly deleted it. By the way, he's 76 years old.
Bye-bye.
I'm sorry for my insensitive comments. They don't reflect that I want to honor and respect all persons' ideals and beliefs. I realize that what I said hurt people, and that was not my intent. Oh, bullshit. Oh, so what was your intent, Carlos Santana? Getting your nose up Dave Chappelle's ass? I sincerely apologize to the transgender community and everyone I offended. He put it up there yesterday, pulled it down today.
Yeah, I hired a media consultant, and he said, or she said, or they said, he apologize and like pretend like he didn't mean it. He stopped a song in the middle of a song.
No, he was in the middle of his set.
In the middle of his set. Oh,
yeah. And anyway, so after he pulled down the apology, then he put up a replacement statement saying, "The energy of consciousness generates its own kind. Hate begets hate. Love begets love."
Oh, yuck.
One poster on Reddit said he spent a solid 15 minutes spouting the most insane anti-trans BS I've maybe ever heard. And another individual said, oh, I was there too. It was very uncomfortable, especially the guy shouting amen throughout. You know, weird evangelicals going to see Carlos Santana. Go figure. It was weird that he went on and on about how we're all special and unique after. I was there. Fuck that guy. And the worst part is most people around me were applauding his garbage sermon. Fuck all those people, too.
Yeah, sounds like...
Please, please, Jimmy Buffett, please. Just don't say anything, okay? I'm running out of heroes. I'm running out of, you know, rock and roll gods. Just please, nothing. At least I think I can still count on Jason Isbell to be a decent human being.
Isn't it funny how music has gotten so political?
Well, it's rock and roll's always been political, Ken. But the thing is, what's weird is as these guys enter their geezerhood, they feel somehow compelled to say bilious bullshit. And it's not just the transit, my trans stuff. No, it's Eric Clapton, who's been a racist POS forever, but everybody just sort of looked past that because, you know, Clapton is God. And joining forms and linking arms with Van Morrison to become a fucking anti-vaxxer.
Yeah, but didn't he play records backwards? I mean, oh my God, it's the satanic forever. So are they satanic too? I don't know. Just asking questions.
Jacking off. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Good use, Ken. Jacking off. Just asking questions,
you're
y'all.
Welcome. I'm not literally doing that, but.
Did I hear Steve?
No, it was me.
Oh, Jeremy.
I was going to say, since you mentioned anti-vaxxers, this isn't an anti-vaxxer, but this is a generalized thing for anyone that watches TV to know that COVID is still a real thing. Not that I need to argue with anyone on the horn or people browsing through, but yesterday there was a WWE superstar. He's 36. 30 fucking six. In good shape. He's been around for a while. He's well-liked. He caught COVID 6 months ago and disappeared from all of wrestling TV. And they kept saying he was battling something life-threatening. But it turns out he caught COVID, long COVID. It complicated an already heart issue he had. Yesterday he died of a heart attack. 36.
But he didn't. But he didn't. He didn't get that there. That there. Steve Gates vaccine, did he?
No, he was vaccinated. Don't attack him. He was vaccinated.
Oh, okay. Then the vaccine killed. Then the vaccine killed him.
I know that's what people are going to say, but I'm trying to tell people it's still a real thing. And actually, they're saying this year could be even worse because it's found a way to evade most of our stuff, and we're going to have stuff mixed in with it. It's going to be a bad winter.
I think you're right. And in fact, I've got that in the stack, Jeremy. And it's not just that it's going to be a bad winter. School districts in Kentucky and Texas have already shut down after a surge of diseases that include COVID. Lee County School District and McGoffin County Schools in Kentucky were closed due to widespread illness. They closed schools in Lee County on Tuesday and Wednesday and switched to virtual on Thursday and Friday. Scott Lockard, public health director for the Kentucky River District that includes Lee County, says, "We're seeing a lot of illness being reported consistent with COVID and influenza. Lee County had a surge of cases and attendance dropped below the threshold needed to stay open, so they closed." And, of course, it's Kentucky. And he went on to say, Scott Lockard did, that, yeah, they've seen an uptick in COVID cases, but the actual number of infections are probably higher because nobody reports at-home test results to the health department, you know, because freedom. And then there's Texas, also a home of freedom. Freedom! Runge, R-U-N-G-E. Oh, shut up, Brother Deacon Asa. Running out of rock and roll gods, you can always become a Ted Nugent fan, Missy. Does that come with a complimentary ice pick for my ears? No, Runge Independent School District in Karnes County, 50 miles southeast of San Antonio. Hey, Texas T. Sent a letter home to parents that they'd be closed from August 22nd through August 29th, and all extracurricular activities would be canceled because of COVID. Somebody tell Greg Aspott. They're being Texan patriotic in Runge. Superintendent Hector Dominguez Jr. said, "The safety and well-being of our students, staff, and community is a top priority." But, of course, the school district itself had no comment when ABC News reached out to them. And the Texas Department of Health and Human Services says new probable and confirmed COVID-19 cases have gone up in Texas 29% recently. And for the week ending August 12th, nationwide, hospitalizations went from 10,370 to 12,612, according to CDC data. And here we are also at the beginning of RSV season. There's a brand new RSV virus out. How many people will get it? I doubt it's going to be sufficient. And we went through an RSV scare last year that had me just absolutely, Annette, me, Ferg, my daughter-in-law, just absolutely sick with fear, watching the little June bug struggle to breathe. Jesus. So, Jeremy, I mean, I think you know. They'll say. I mean, he was vaccinated. Oh, the vaccine done killed him. Don't you expect?
I expect that maggots will. But the point is, just like most entertainers on TV, Sean Hannity, Lord knows Tucker, all had the fucking vaccine. Every public official that worked in his job around public had it to protect them and the public. No corporation will let their people work. It's an argument not even having about it, because we know that for a fact.
Yeah.
No company was open themselves liable to be sued for spreading a fucking killer disease. He had the vaccine. It's not what killed him. A fucking disease did. It's dangerous. It's real. It shouldn't be trifled with. Fuck around and find out.
Yes. I mean, that's the ultimate fuck around and find out. But you know what? It's par for the course, in a way. You know, the hypocrisy of railing against the vaccine when you yourself are vaccinated. But there's a previous manifestation of hypocrisy. Namely, I remember when fat, dead Rush Limbaugh, the Pineapple Prince, would hot up the mic and start screaming about, "My friends, the unions are destroying America. They're driving up wages and they want exorbitant salaries," when the fucker's bringing down $50 million a year and is a union member. Just like Tucker Carlson, union member. Just like Sean Hannity, union member. Just like the Beckerhead, union member. All of them proud members of SAG-AFTRA. But none of those fucks are out walking the picket lines, are they? Because they don't want their mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing minions to know that they are proud union members. It's disgusting. Hey, I'd know that red necktie anywhere. That's Jack in Shreveport. Hey, Jack. Jack? Time out, okay? Sorry, one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite obscure comedies. Okay, well, anybody else? By the way, if you can't manage Skype, you can always get in on the stress line, 844-843-4676. And we are at the beginning of the third hour of the program, and we are on a rather grim slog toward the end of the month of August. We are down to $1,720. To go fundraising just to catch up. You know, if we could finish off last Friday, that would be fantastic. And that would mean $220 to raise. that would it, we would at least be done with last week before we start next week. So we wouldn't be 2 weeks behind. So let's work toward that in the last hour. 10 people at $22, 22 people at $10, one at $220. Or if anybody wants to jump in with a have a show on me, I know that's a huge ask, but still. I remain fairly amazed by the fact that we've been able to do this for 20 years with no Stupid Beats ads, no Buy Gold Now, no Bose Wave Radio ads. Thank you, Jeremy. Okay, $1,700. Thank you so much. And I sometimes I wonder if there was a staff here and a sales department and going out and getting ads and whatnot, would people like that better? Having a show that's actually 120 minutes long with a solid hour of commercials through a 3-hour period? Because that's how it breaks out. I said the other night when I posted the show link over on Twitter, and I'm not being an egomaniac. I try so hard not to be. Because I am essentially humble. Or humble. I feel French when I say humble. But the bottom line is, yes, Ralphs, thank you. That's how we got down to 1720. Thank you so much. I thought I mentioned it. If I didn't, I apologize. Thank you so much, Ralphs. You're always there, and it's a beautiful thing. Thank you. But the fact of the matter is, there aren't a lot of people out there working our side of the street, and God knows not working the right-wing side of the street, who can do what I do. And that is hot up the mic at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time or any other hour of the day or night and go uninterrupted, except for the occasional Green News report, go uninterrupted for 180 and sometimes longer, 180 minutes, 3 hours. And it's all information. With a little bit of clowning around and sharing, sharing y'all's input, calls once in a while. And if you stop to think about it, it's pretty damned impressive. Every now and then I play with the calculator on the phone, trying to figure out, so 52 weeks in a year, 5 times 52, okay? 5x 52 equal. That's 260 shows a year times 3. That's 780 hours a year times 20. So as of February 4th, there will be something on the order of 15,600 hours. Of programming created by y'all. I talk, some of y'all call, but y'all have kept it going for 20 years. And it's been more of a struggle lately, but that still continues to amaze me. 15,600 hours. And I suck at calculators and I suck at math. It may not be that number. I don't know. Ken, you got a note from Jude out in the Great Northwest. Ken, in his vulnerability, coupled with a willingness to call in while traveling closely with hesitancy, provides a door for others to possibly call into the horn. I understand exactly, as I too have the exact same emotions that flood me. So keep on keeping on, Ken. Warmly, Jude.
Thank you. thank you so much, dude. I appreciate that so much. I can't tell you, words don't describe the affirmation.
Well, Jude is the Horn spiritual advisor, so she's very good at picking up those vibes. Jude also added a small donation, yet it sets forth a ripple outwards. Love, women standing. Thank you.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kevin. Hey, so I was just looking at some quotes here about Trump and the weight and everything.
Yeah.
So Stormy Daniels chimed in, apparently. She goes, okay, I'm 110 pounds and a virgin. I'm not a scale or a doctor, but I have spent some time beneath 215 pound men, and Tiny was not one of them. Oh!
Ow. Hey, Stormy, this cowbell's for you, hon. Well, it's like, you know, I've said in several places online today, yeah, I'm a petite 5'8", 135 pounds, 36, 24, 36. Sure.
And I saw Rob Reiner goes, 215 pounds? No effing way. Oh, boy. Everybody's chiming in.
I wish, well, if they didn't do it for other inmates, if they look at other inmates and say, hey, how much you weigh? How tall are you? Well, the funny thing is, though, every jail has one of those, well, it's like, you know, banks have the same thing by the door. Where did I see one the other day? Was it a bank? No, it wasn't, I haven't been in a bank. I don't know, maybe it was a convenience store or something, but there's a strip, a height strip by the door, so that if somebody's running out the door, you can go, oh yeah, they were 5'11". And jails, right. and jails have those as well. And so, yep. If you're sitting there at 6 feet tall and you're claiming to be 6 feet three, Mr. Trump, stand over there by all those numbers, would you, buddy?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they don't tend to have scales, but this is a. I mean, if the Fulton County Sheriff's Department's paying any attention, the fact that they're being laughed at for taking the word of a con artist and a liar, that can't make the sheriff feel real good.
Maybe the sheriff's, ultra MAGA.
No, he's not.
Oh, okay.
He's a Democrat. Sorry. He's a Democrat.
Oh, well, then, damn. They, just like with Mike Pence, they had a little political capital with Trump coming to their house, and he's the sheriff, and he's in charge, and he can just say, no, we're going to do things, my way. You're in my house. Anyway. But everybody knows he's not 215 pounds. This will probably wear off for a while.
But I think it'll stick with him for a while. And, a guy, I think he was associated with ESPN a long time ago. Or not a long time ago, but back during the 2016 campaign, perhaps. That seems to jibe. People who follow sports in the Horn Family Community Congregation might recall this. He told a story of playing golf with Trump. In which...
In which
Trump openly cheated. Are you a golfer, Kevin?
I'm not like Phil
Burrick,
but I get out there.
You're not a trifecta hole in one guy.
No, I'm like my union's having them, and we do it every year. Our union has a golf tournament for MDA, and we raise like $8,000-$10,000, and we have a nice spread and raffles, all that shotgun start, all that, all that good stuff.
Yeah, oh, those are. I fun. Do that. Best ball and all of that stuff and longest drive.
Everybody, all the letter carriers, retirees, it's really cool. Everybody's just like, It's a great way to meet people that you haven't seen in a while too. You know, it's almost like having a Thanksgiving dinner, reunion dinner or something like that. But anyway, but yeah, that's about all I do. That one and maybe once or twice.
Well, but do you remember that article? Where?
Who was it? Who said that? Who was a golfer? Or who was an ESPN guy?
I can't remember.
It's real bad. Everybody be like, hey, that should have been like a. That should have been like a six, and he'll say no, it was a four, and just like
yeah. But there was something about overshooting the green, if I recall. Let's see. Let me just do a quick Trump cheats at golf. Well, that popped up real easy.
I was gonna light up like a Christmas tree. But
okay, April 2nd, 2019. Rick Riley. Yeah, there we go. Golf writer, Golf Magazine.
Yeah, Sports Illustrated. Oh, golf. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, how and why President Trump cheats at golf even when he's playing against Tiger Woods.
Oh, my God.
Adapted from Commander in Cheat, How Golf Explains Trump by Rick Riley. He said, Jack O'Donnell worked with Donald Trump for 4 years as vice president of Trump Plaza Casino in Atlantic City. O'Donnell's dad was one of the founders of Sawgrass, the iconic Pete Dye golf course near Jacksonville, Florida. My dad always told us to respect the game. That's the one part of the game that tells me what kind of a person you are. You play the ball where it lies.
Yep.
So when O'Donnell's office colleague, the late Mark Ettis, came back after his first round with Trump, O'Donnell couldn't resist asking, so, does he improve his lie? Ettis looked at him and threw his head back in laughter. Every shot but the tee shot.
Did you see that shank? It was about a month ago. It was all over. He was, he was an approach shot, and he was on the left side of the fairway, and he shanked it all the way to the other side of the fairway. Just like a completely terrible shot, and just got back in the golf cart all pissed off. You see that one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, about a month ago, I think it was, yeah.
Like, then he left the ball there and drove to where he thought he went.
Who the hell would want to play golf with that guy? I mean, ugh.
Okay, here it is, Kevin. On this one hole, Donald hits his second and fats it into the water. But he quickly says to me, hey, throw me another ball. They weren't looking.
Hey, throw me another ball. They weren't looking.
So I do. But he fats that one into the water, too. So he drives up and drops where he should have dropped the first time and hits it on the green. Meanwhile, on the other side of the fairway, Woods, being Woods, that would be Tiger, has hit his approach to a foot from the hole for a kick in birdie. Everybody's on the green now with Trump about 20 feet from the hole and getting a stroke. Trump said, devoutly to be wished, getting a stroke. So where
does everybody stand here?
Faxon said, well, Tiger just made a three. What's that putt for, Mr. President?
Four for a three.
Oh, my God.
Trump was actually putting for a seven, but he was claiming it was for a four.
Yeah.
You know, I can actually feel sorry for him because I would have hit the seven or the eight or the ten.
There's the ESPN. Yeah, Mike Tirico. Mike Tirico. Trump hosted three famous ESPN football announcers, Mike Tirico, John Gruden, and Ron Jaworski at one of his courses. Trump loves to show off his courses to celebrities, and the more celebrated you are, the more he wants you to see them, and the more he wants his members to see you. He arrived as the other three were warming up, and he picked teams immediately.
It's going to be me and Gruden, because I like winners.
Off they went. At one point, they were playing a blind par 5, and Tirico, who's a 12.3 handicap, had 230 yards into the green. He hit the three wood of his life. Oh, my God, his caddy said, open mouth. The thing had the flag covered from the start. It crested the hill perfectly and was going to be tight to the pin. Shocked at his sudden skill, Tirico high-fived his caddy and strode toward the green, his shoes barely touching the grass. But somehow, when they got there, the ball wasn't near the pin. It wasn't even on the green. It was 50 feet left of the pin in the bunker. Unless it hit a drone and ricocheted sideways, there was no physical way it could have ended up there.
Lousy break,
Trump said to Tirico, who checked the marking on the ball to make sure it was his. It was. Befuddled, it took Tirico two swipes to escape the bunker on the way to a seven. Afterwards, here's the punchline. Afterwards, Tirico remembers, Trump's caddy came up to me and said, you know that shot you hit on the par 5? It's about 10 feet from the hole. Trump threw it into the bunker. I watched him do it.
I remember that.
What did Tirico do? He laughed, shook his head, went inside, and paid Trump his money. When it comes to golf, Trump is the tornado, and you are the trailer. But I bring all of this up for a reason. And that is to say that, you know, golf, you know, generally speaking, you know, you don't have to have teams, you don't have to have a foursome, you don't have to do Nassaws or best balls or anything like that. You can play by yourself.
Yeah.
But when you play by yourself, it's you and the rules. And if you will cheat at golf while you're playing by yourself, that kind of defines your entire existence.
Yeah.
I was a terrible golfer. In fact, well, I'll just go ahead and say this. If I was ever able, I'd love to get back into golf.
Yeah, me too. It's the time you need to practice.
Everything's changed. I used to have an absolutely monumental slice. I mean, people would come out of the clubhouse to watch me slice because they were huge. I was a big hitter. I just couldn't get the ball to go straight. So, you know, line up. You know, you square up, you hit, you take your tee shot, and the next thing you know, you're on the next fairway over to the right, and you fight your way back across through the woods. You know, past the windmill. And then I'd adjust for the slice, and then my slice would be gone, and instead I'd hit these horrifying rifle shot draws somewhere off to the left of me, out in Mason County. We were in Roane County at the time. And, there's no getting it, but you play in it because you like it. I've seen grown men throw fits on the course and snap the shafts of their irons over their knee, throw drivers throw drivers into the water hazards and shit like that. But it's a character thing. And there's another story about Nitwit Nero dummying up scores to make sure that he was club champion of his own course. You know, that's like a mob boss owning a casino and playing the slots hard to make sure he was the one who won the jackpot. I mean, you already own the house. The house always wins. What's going on?
Or like here in Massachusetts, was it back in the 90s, I think, one of the lottery commissioners won, was it $5 million or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. For real.
But interestingly, according to Rick Riley in this article, asking why he cheats when he doesn't even have to, Harvard psychiatrist Dr. Lance Dodes said because he has to. He needs to be the best at everything. He can't stand not winning, not being the best. It had to have started very early in his development. To him, not being the best is like fingernails on the blackboard to you. He can't live with it.
There's old Fred Trump again.
Yeah.
A small little man.
Pitting his sons against each other. Like, you know, some sort of sick man with a monarchical fit. This crooked old sack of sin is a psychological mess from the minute he emerged from his mother's womb. On the subject of golf cheating, Matt in San Francisco says, to be fair, any non-pro player should be allowed to cheat when playing Tiger Woods. Putting a fairway wood shot of a lifetime into the bunker when it was 10 feet from the hole, that's just dirty.
Yeah.
That's beyond. That's,
but a guy lucky. But the larger point is, a guy who cheats at golf will try to cheat an election too. Because winning is everything. And I need to send out some, I need to send out some thanks. Thank you, Jack in Shreveport. Thank you so much. That gets us down to 1675. And women's standing got us down to 1665. So $165, and we're done with last Friday. And that's 10 people at 1650 or 16 and a half people at 10 in the next 39 minutes. Thanks. Thanks, Jack. Thanks, Jude. And women standing. Thank you.
Welcome, Jerry.
So I was hearing, anybody speaking?
No, not at the moment.
I was hearing that, I heard Harry Littman today on work, and I was listening to Deadline White House. He said that it's not a slam dunk, that it possibly still could be shifted to federal court for, was it Meadows, and who else was doing it?
Yeah, it's a possibility, and if it gets shifted to federal court, it just goes away.
Yeah. Yeah, Harry Littman said it's better than a puncher's chance, he said, because of, I don't know, something about all kinds of minutiae or whatever, federal stuff that, I don't know.
Oh, by the way, we now know who bailed out Pastor Lee, who, you know, participated in the witness intimidation of Ruby Freeman. Jesus. Silk. Rochelle Hardaway Richardson, formerly of Diamond and Silk, whom we referred to as Paste and Polyester. Well, Diamond shuffled off this mortal coil as a result of COVID some years back.
Good.
Silk is still around. And she bailed out Pastor Lee.
Because she can.
There's no and she
and Silk said, "I did it because he needs to be in church on Sunday." And again, yes, he's Missouri Synod Lutheran. Jessica tells me one does not say Elka, one says ELCA. Thank you, Jessica.
B. Tracy's waiver. Does he have a continuing waiver or per conversation?
Yeah, well, I mean, Tracy's just Tracy.
Yeah, but you can't. It's funny because, well, I kind of lost my train of thought, but you can't say things that she can say, so we can. No, never mind. Forget it. Sorry.
That's okay.
You know, Robin, you should hook up this pastor in Georgia, Joel Osteen, to tell him how to grift so he can make money and have a jet and private car and a pool with insulin in it.
Joel Osteen's so 3 years ago. Kenneth Copeland's where it's at.
Hey, Kenny. Ugh.
Oh, here's one in Matt, that's in Matt in San Francisco's bailiwick. I guess the right wing Wambulance Brigade is now terribly, terribly butthurt over the fact that the University of San Francisco is considering changing its mascot's name. The mascot is a masked man with a green hat with a yellow hat band and green gloves with a yellow wristband. and he's referred to as the Don, San Francisco's, San Francisco University's sporting teams are referred to as the Dons. And so the administration received a petition from a number of students saying, hey, and he's described as a mustachioed swashbuckler. But the petition said that the Don is associated with the exploitation of the indigenous people of California by Spanish colonizers. And so speaking to the San Francisco Chronicle this week, university officials said, they'll consider replacing the mascot. The mascot's been there for over 90 years. I'm not all worked up about that. And Don, I never knew this, is an acronym for De Origen, or I never know what to do with the Spanish G. De Origen Noble, someone of noble birth. San Francisco University said, the name references the early history of California and San Francisco, which was marked by the exploits of the adventuresome and swashbuckling Spanish Dons. I guess those guys would be the equivalent of Cortez and his conquistadores. All USF students and alumni are of noble origin who share in the long passion for learning in order to better understand the past, clarify the present, and anticipate the future. Thus, we are proud to call ourselves the Dons. Yeah. Interestingly, not far from there, people are fairly comfortable now referring to Stanford as the Cardinal. I think it's the Stanford Cardinal, not Cardinals.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
But the fact of the matter is, way, 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 way back, before so-called political correctness, they were the Stanford Indians.
Never knew that.
I'm pretty sure. And they realized it would probably be a good idea to not be that anymore. And oddly enough, Stanford University continues to thrive as the Harvard of the Bay Area. Or as they prefer to think of it, Harvard is the Stanford on the Charles River. Design professor Rachel Beth Eigenhofer sent a letter to the student newspaper in 2021 and said, I can't help but see the connection between a masked male mascot known for controlling women, organized crime, Spanish colonization, unapologetically lassoing and sword fighting, and riding off on his high horse, and the culture that has allowed the many accounts of chauvinistic behavior, sexual harassment, and assault to occur at USF. Because apparently, in 2021, there was an investigation over charges that the university had mishandled sexual misconduct incidents and sort of swept things under the rug for more than 10 years. Jesus, that sounds like Baylor under Ken Starr. Okay, Matt, thanks for the input. The Dons, Matt says, we can sometimes get overly politically correct, kind of bend ourselves into circles, but hey, if it offends you, we'll look into it. I sometimes want to yell, hey, okay, that's important, but can we do something about the unhoused? We can get to the mascot after that. You're not wrong. But people will absolutely go to the mattresses over things like that. And I don't want to discount the concerns. And I don't think online culture has helped in any wise in that regard. Because that just means that the fighting keyboard warriors can sit there banging away like they're the last journalist in Saigon before the evacuation, hammering, hammering, hammering on the keyboard. God damn it, I'll show them! And then there's always some right-winger sitting there going, "Damn, broken political correctness are trying to cancel the dawn."
Robin, you earned a cowbell for thinking of the last journalist in Saigon banging on the keyboard.
Thank you. Good. There's actually a story behind that, because there always is. That was the way one of the older journalists at CNN described me trying to meet my deadline early on for my newscast. Yeah, Robin's over there banging the keyboard like, yeah. Because I wasn't particularly a good typist. Took a little while. But thank you, Jeremy. Okay, this is one of those awkward silences. Ralph's asked, if Mark Meadows' trial gets moved to federal court, does the Hatch Act apply? Oh, Lordy. I have no idea. That's for the research department. Wait, Ralphs, you're the research department. Or, okay, back to Nitwit Nero's weight, Irish Dave. Maybe the orange leader thought he was giving his weight in kilograms? I hate
the metrics.
Since God's own party is so concerned with election integrity, where's their plan for throwing ineligible candidates off the ballot?
Well, we're definitely all for throwing Joe Biden off the ballot because he's crooked Joe Biden.
Mark Meadows sang like Punky.
Oh! Chirp, chirp, beep, beep. That was quality, Ken.
Thank you. I know. I got a little ego problem, too.
Get Don on the phone. Where are those pictures I was supposed to see?
God damn it. I miss the radio. I do. I grew up on radio. I miss the. Oh my gosh!
Oh, don't tune in now. It's just a vast wasteland now. Commercial radio
it is. I miss the radio that used to be, and you know all the what's the problems with the music industry, hedge funders, for lack of a better term. There was a lot of talent. At least, I'm lucky to have, it's called Lecom Radio. It used to be, it's an offshoot from Mercer University. But anyway, Lecom, they produce DOs like crazy. But anyway, they have an old, they play, 60s, 70s, like the, up to 85. And that's pretty good, but, they have live, DJs, which is pretty nice. You know, the rest of it's fake. iHeartRadio, garbage like that.
And that's all just automated garbage. You can literally hear the same songs being played on different stations when they're owned by a conglomerate. I've experienced driving out of one signal into another signal and finding a radio station owned by, say, iHeartRadio.
Mm-hmm.
And the same songs playing. Or will play like a minute later.
You know what show has really gone downhill, and not, I mean, not that it was a
great show before, like Coast to Coast AM. They're really bad now. I mean, I liked Art Bell. I mean, I know that stuff was crazy. I liked.
But did, no, I get it. I was never necessarily a listener. But
I liked how he showed, though. I like listening to him. You know what I mean? Like I like listening to you or Scott. I would listen to, you know, I mean, I would listen to you and Scott if you guys had. I'd listen to Scott all night long.
Yeah.
Art Bell, yeah, it was all crazy stuff, but he just had a way of, you know, kind of pulling you in a little bit.
And George Norrie just never had, and I mean, who's doing Coast to Coast AM?
Who owns it? He does?
I mean, is George Norrie still doing it?
He's still doing it, yeah. And he's just, it's just, you know, it's about, what, 28 minutes of programming, I think? I mean, I caught it one night. I just kind of like in my head did news at the top of the hour, then a bunch of spots. He didn't start talking until like 16 minutes after the hour. And then same thing with the back hour, pretty similar, you know, like 28 minutes.
Norrie's really the one that drove Coast to Coast into the right wing. Coast to Coast used to be about crazy people. And I know what you mean about Art Bell. Art Bell had a way of drawing out the crazy people, making them feel comfortable enough to talk about their crazy story in an entertaining way and not making them feel intimidated. That was his gift.
Right. He had a talent.
And he definitely was a right winger, but he didn't force it on the nation as much as Norrie does. Norrie is a hardcore sympathetic like Trump. His whole show is politics and making money. That's all it is now.
Yeah. He's careful, though. He doesn't mention Trump by name or any of that stuff. He's
and, of course, really, I mean, the one I never got to listen to him a lot. Oh, Brother Deacon Asa. Who am I thinking of? You know. Pure genius. You'd listen to it. I caught him a couple of times going up the road to Morgantown years ago. And these created characters saying these insane things. And you're going, wait a minute, is this
Phil real? Henry?
Yeah, Phil Henry. Genius.
I loved him. He was a master. All the voices in the show are all him. He had conversations with six people simultaneously, doing all the voices, never missing a beat, and still making jokes in the conversation. It was pure genius.
And is he podcasting still, or?
I think Acer or someone, it might have been even Steve from Georgia, mentioned that you can still buy his stuff online. He has a website. But I dear God, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think he's a politician now or something like that. He moved into politics. And unfortunately, he is kind of a right winger, even though he was funny at the time.
Is he right wing? Oh, damn.
Pretty sure he is. I think I heard that from where.
Well, that must be the last of the funny right wingers, because there aren't any funny ones now.
Well,
has anybody even seen Dennis Miller lately? I mean, when the funniest guy that the right wing has is Greg Gutfeld over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. I mean, that is running on a gas tank that is entirely empty of funny.
Yeah, so when I listened to the radio, I was listening to the music, and then the DJ is, you know, in between. You could tell they had their own personalities, or some have leeway. You probably didn't back in the day, but I just enjoyed listening to Scott and Robin. And, yikes. Sorry.
No, you're good. A couple of things. Brother Deacon Asa, when I was talking about Lyndon LaRouche a little bit ago, and by the way, if we could raise $165, we would be done with last Friday. And starting the last 4 days of August, 2 weeks behind, that's tough. Program note. I'm probably not going to be here the last day of August. And the first day of September, because my son gave me a call, and it's kind of complicated, but he needs Annette and me to come down that weekend, leave on Thursday, and then hopefully my daughter-in-law can get an OB appointment on Friday because she hasn't been checked in months. And so they don't have childcare, and they don't have a vehicle that will fit two adults and two infants. It's an old Chevy S10 with, you know, one bench seat, or two seats, actually. But anyway, they need us to come down there so Annette can look after the kids, and I can drive her and him to the appointment, and that's going to necessitate my absence on next Thursday and next Friday. So we've actually only got three more days of August broadcasting coming up. So I just wanted to put that out there as a program note. I hate
this. I'll drive the program into the ditch, and I will take the blame for it, and you can get the heat off you, Robin. I want to let you know, end of the month, Labor Day, I know they'll bastardize it, so it'll still be fun to watch just for entertainment purposes, though, but History is doing a three-part miniseries on ancient cultures like Rome, Greece, one of their big productions they do, just so you know.
Oh, dear God, if I can't watch those things. Because I start screaming at the screen. You're getting it wrong!
But
did any of you people read the actual source material?
It was so good!
I know. It's like eating cotton candy. By the way, George in Coarse Gold said, when I run out of podcasts to listen to, I enjoy Bob Dylan's Theme Time Radio Hour on YouTube. And over on satellite radio, I confess, I get a kick out of Radio Margaritaville because it's not all just Jimmy Buffett's music. There's other stuff mixed in and interviews and carrying on and whatnot. That's pretty enjoyable. In answer to Ralph's question, Darlene says, Fani already raised the Hatch Act in her counter motion to Mark Meadows, pointing out that he admitted to violating it by saying he was acting in a political capacity for Trump in Georgia. She opened the door. The DOJ, Jack Smith, or going to have to look at it now, or should. Yeah, and by the way, a little bit of breaking, well, not breaking now, but news today out of Politico. Kyle Cheney, their senior legal affairs reporter, says that three of Julius Geiser's co-defendants in Georgia are now saying straight up that they only became fake electors in Georgia at the direction of Donald Trump. Sean Still, Kathleen Latham, and David Schaefer are all charged, part of the RICO enterprise, and they all say that Nitwit Nero told them that
You'll be viewed as carrying out a federal function in part because of Trump and his attorney's blessing, according to Cheney's reporting. Sean Still says that he signed false papers claiming to be a legitimate presidential elector at Trump's direction.
So that's three who have rolled on him already, plus Meadows, who has sung, as was said earlier, like Punky. The box, it would seem, in which Nitwit Nero finds himself is growing smaller. You know, the one thing I'm surprised is he's selling koozies, and he's selling T-shirts, and he's selling mouse pads. In a world where you can get panties with Che Guevara on them, I'm surprised he isn't selling those. Only with his mugshot on the front. Dear God, what a horrifying thought.
Well, I remember your show earlier in the week when you were saying, you know, go after the kids and take everything he owns and right down to the kitchen, Elon Musk with the sink, and take every dime he's got, everything.
Well, I mean, the statute exists. There's a civil aspect to the Georgia RICO, just like there's a civil forfeiture aspect to the federal RICO.
Yep.
And the thing is, that may be why he has so assiduously worked to remove his name from any properties or the Trump organizations or moved it into shell companies or, and whatnot. All of that can be examined by the court, and if they are found to be fraudulent or done for the purposes of evading the law, the court can overturn that stuff.
Mind you, Letitia James' court case starts next month.
Yes.
The starting penalty is $250 million. There's no cap.
Right.
She could drain him of everything he owns in New York. He might have to sell businesses if this thing goes south like it looks like we quite possibly could.
So she might clean him out. Theoretically, bed monster is closest to New York. Just run across the river and drop a judgment lien on bed monster.
Oh yeah, she's heated now.
And of course, New York City itself, she might drop a lien on his tacky ass penthouse apartment.
She might have to share with all the other people.
No, she doesn't have to share shit. Well, if she gets to it first.
But then they don't get paid, so.
Well, the thing is, the two Jack Smith federal cases don't necessarily have a seizure aspect to them that I'm aware of, but Georgia damn sure does.
Yeah, so maybe 3 years from now, we're seeing Donald Trump Jr. on True TV, huh?
I just want to see Donald Trump Sr. standing outside on Fifth Avenue with a tin cup with some pencils in it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we need, a picture of Donald Trump on a T-shirt that says, would you buy an apple from this man?
Oh, boy.
You know, his orange tangerine nose pressed up against a frosty window pane, looking at the diners inside, 21.
These pettifoggers will start dropping one by one if stuff gets leaked out, you know?
But the fact that three of the fake electors are already saying, oh, yeah, he told us to do it.
That's all you need to know right there. What else do you need to know?
I mean, I haven't heard a lot about that in monitoring the for-profit media news today, but smells like a big deal to me.
He looked a little different with without the comb over.
I have quickly another story changed from I blindly signed something when indictment drops to he made me do it.
And somebody asked me, why is he in New Jersey instead of down at Mar-a-Lardas? And I answered, well, given the heat down there right now, his Aquanet comb over might spontaneously combust and take him down all Charles the Bad style. He could self-immolate down there. Oh, Matt writes in, right-wing funny. Cruelty ain't funny, and all humor is based on some kernel of truth. When all you do is lie and be cruel, there's no truth to mine for the funny. Might be funny to psychopaths, but that's a rather small market. And for those who have seen the movie The Name of the Rose, in the last 7 years, has anybody seen Donald Trump laugh?
No.
Even when he was co-hosting Saturday Night Live, he never laughed.
Never gets a joke.
Under almost any other circumstance, you'd say he's pathetic. But he is most decidedly not pathetic.
It's like Mary Trump said, he doesn't know any feelings other than self-loathing, self-fear, and self-anger. He knows nothing else. He doesn't know how to feel them. He doesn't know humor. He doesn't know joy. He doesn't know love. He's a reptile, literally.
Oh, and I don't know if y'all caught this. Irish Dave just called it out to me, or pointed it out to me. Damn, fake news. Zillow, you know, the real estate website, says listing the alleged sale of Mar-a-Lago was incorrect because people were kind of flipping out a little bit, saying that on August 4th, Nitwit Nero had sold Magalardas for $422 million. He may, however, have, and if the date is August 4th, 2023, and he's transferring ownership around and out of his name, that's the kind of thing a civil forfeiture can look into and say, oh, that's a fraudulent transaction.
Oh, yeah. He can't get away with that just because he does that, yeah.
Nobody would buy that piece of shit. They would raise it.
And Andrew Weissman, you know, who was a senior prosecutor for Mueller, said, fraudulent transfer?
My understanding was he never owned Mar-a-Lago. He was given an open-ended lease. He leases the whole property.
Well, what it says here is that according to David K. Johnston, he purchased the property, he got the furniture and everything in it for an unrecorded $10 million mortgage. Zillow reports, they said it was an incorrect listing. Zillow reports he sold Mar-a-Lago to Don Jr. for $422 million before the old man's latest arrest. Johnston said the price seems greatly inflated. He bought it, furniture and all, with an unrecorded $10 million mortgage. There's a tax story. And maybe a tax crime in this. So, what I said was possible seems to be coming to fruition. He's terrified. He's terrified of Letitia James, and he's terrified of Fonnie Willis.
Sure is.
He knows that it all may be exposed, and that by the time they're done, he may not be able to afford a pot to piss in, let alone have a window to throw it out of. And you know that little. You know that ponderous sack of sin could not survive for a week trying to live like a whole bunch of his sycophants and admirers live, you know, out there with their, you know, they're out there with their, you know, their broken, you know, broken down lives, but they spent $50 or $100 for a Trump 2024 flag because they gotta help. They gotta help out the president. He needs our help. Right?
They need to take his passports.
Yeah, I'm still astonished by that. Maybe he doesn't have one now. Because when he was president, he had a diplomatic passport.
But does that continue when you're out of office?
I sincerely do not know. But I know that passports generally have a 10-year lifespan. That's why now that I've gone through all my paperwork, I have to get a new passport if I can ever afford one.
My understanding from someone in the know that dealt with a lot of the secrecy, political type stuff, he said a lot of that stuff that lives with the president while they're currently a president can be carried on, but it's at the discretion of the new president to the former presidents. So if you're in their good graces, like Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, Bush Jr., Obama, you probably have it. Biden pretty much stripped Trump of all that stuff other than political protection. He stripped him of everything. Everything. So he probably doesn't have that political passport. He might have another one And there's a good chance that Monday, Fani will strip him of it as a consequence of evading his or her orders and the judge's orders. They could say, here's a $100,000 fine and we want your passport, rather than making him martyr and putting him in prison. They could start that way. They're going to do that first.
So her mother, right. She can fuck with him bit by bit by bit if she wants to. And like I said, every time he does something even marginal, gives her an argument for looking at the judge and saying, no, really, we got to try this thing quick. Because he's trying to corrupt the entire trial court process. And look at the judge and say, you know, this isn't about me. Your Honor, this is about the integrity of the court and the integrity of the trial process and the integrity of the Constitution. He's not going to stop, and as long as he continues, he is going to continue to do damage to the underlying principles of American law and justice. And it'll be a compelling argument. By the way, George writing in from Coarse Gold, subject line, yucking it up with the Sergeys. The only time I ever saw Trump laugh was when it was in the Oval Office with the Russians.
Oh, yeah.
True, George. Good call. So I guess we've reached the end of the program. It's been a rousing good conversation. And back on Monday, again, if we can round up $165 sometime or more over the weekend, that'd be great. Sorry about all the fundraising, but it's what keeps this on the air. You know, I talk about things like getting a passport or getting health insurance or paying for my meds. And I'm not just talking about my trans meds. I'm talking about, you know, other medications.
Just so everyone knows, since Robin started the call, when she leaves, the front porch dies. There is no back porch because she started the call.
Oh, shit.
That happened last week when you hung up. Everyone was cut off instantly.
Well, there's another good reason.
One consequence of you running the show.
There's another reason for me not to be trusted with with starting the call.
I can bring everybody back in.
Steve! Steve!
What's up, Rob? Soup. Just before you go, you were asking about Phil Henry. I was at a webinar, cybersecurity, and Phil Henry was actually a guest speaker. He was demonstrating social engineering. And between every scene, they would ask, what was your favorite takeaway from this scene? Phil Henry. Then they go on to the next one. What was your favorite takeaway? And I would always comment, bring back Phil Henry. Bring back Phil Henry. You know, I guess they got sick of hearing from me. But, yeah, that's where he's at now. That's the last I've seen him.
Social engineering.
Yes. That is like where somebody can disguise their voice or, you know, they get you to hold the door open for them. And he was slipping in and out of characters from hacker to, you know, just a normal operator. And he just did it so seamlessly. It was amazing.
Oh, he's a brilliant performer.
Yeah,
and it's nice to hear from you, Steve. Because I kind of wanted to know, just based on everything that's been going on, what's it? I mean, granted, you're not down there sitting on Peachtree Street right now or anything, but
70 miles removed.
Yeah, but a little, you know, you're a little closer to the action than the vast majority of us. Are you picking up any kind of a vibe?
Well, my main concern, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago and kind of got poo-pooed, everybody said, oh, that'll never happen, is that they're going to move this to federal court. And, you know, that's – I heard you guys talking about that earlier. And that's what seems to be all over the news right now, you know.
Well, and what is it, 5 weeks until the Let's Replace Prosecutors statute goes into effect in Georgia?
There's that. Yep, there's that. And I don't know the logistics behind that. I'll have to do some homework. I don't know if it's a bipartisan committee.
It isn't.
So it's not.
No.
It's all a bunch of right-wing tools. Huh?
No, it's all maggots, you know, all maggots all the time here on WMAGA.
Well, they kind of have reason. Go ahead.
Rest a little easy on that idea of them moving to federal court. Just even if they do, they still remain state charges.
Even if they're found guilty in a federal court, they still go to state law.
Yeah, but Jeremy, the reason for moving it to federal court is the presumption that if they move it to federal court, then it all goes away under a claim that Mark Meadows was acting as a government employee, and that Trump had a right to do what he did because he was acting in the course and scope of the presidency.
And they're wanting to get into a more Republican-friendly district than Fulton County, which is
right, because the entire jury pool of the Northern District of Georgia is every county encompassed by the Northern District of Georgia, whereas the jury pool for the case as it presently stands is Fulton County.
And as you know, Robin, Fulton County is huge. And there's the outskirts of Fulton County, like down around Douglasville and the northern part of it, Alpharetta. That's all Maggotville. So if they could incorporate those people but they can incorporate demographically people from like northern Fulton County into the jury pool, they would stand a better chance of acquittal. And that's probably what they're shooting for.
Well, but if they're in Fulton County, they're potentially part of the jury pool one way or the other. It's based on things like voter registrations and driver's licenses and names pulled as a result of consultations with boards. But the thing is, if you make it the entire Northern District of Georgia, then suddenly the people who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings and send Marjorie Taylor Greene to Congress, they're in the jury pool too.
Right, right. That's where I was going and tried to convey poorly.
I doubt highly, after all the work Fannie's done with all these people, she's going to slip out of her hands. The fact they're trying to jump ship proves they know their fucking ships are going down. She'll hold them. I don't think they're going anywhere. It's fruitless. It's just to slow things down. I have faith in her and what she's doing.
And do you think they can bounce her without cause? I mean, what's the cause? She hasn't done anything wrong.
No. They need 2/3 of your Congress to do it.
Hold on, Jeremy. That's not what Steve's talking about. He's talking about the replace the prosecutor commission that's coming online in 5 weeks in Georgia.
Yes,
not federal.
I know, Fannie Willis. They need 2/3 of Georgia Congress, or your
no,
House
they don't.
They don't.
The commission does it. The commission is independent of the legislature. It is strictly the Maggot Commission, and then they have to send it to Brian Kemp.
Which should be a bipartisan commission.
The Democrats said, hey, can we at least have one seat? And the Republicans said, fuck you.
Yeah, it's a lot of hurdles, you know. But, you know, just...
There have already been legal challenges filed against this travesty. So it's entirely possible that, you know, it may get overturned in federal court or state court. But even if they try to bounce her the minute they come online, it still is a process, and whatever happens on October 23rd is still going to happen.
Hasn't Brian Kemp pretty much foreshadowed that even if he could, he would change the law so he could pardon Trump? He has no interest in doing it.
This is not that.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
The commission shit cans her, sends it to Brian Kemp for Brian Kemp to appoint a new prosecutor. But then what would probably happen is, you know, it's not just the federal government that has career civil servants. Before Fannie Willis became district attorney of Fulton County, she was a career prosecutor in the Fulton County District Attorney's Office. And so it is likely that the vast majority of lawyers working inside that office would quit. And that would mean a complete collapse of the criminal justice system in Fulton County.
Very concerning, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and things that okay. So if you don't have a prosecutor to show up for criminal cases, then the jails get emptied for failure to prosecute, and that puts some bad people back out on the streets and that will drive MAGA crazy.
You think Fani Willis saw all this coming?
And hell yes.
Oh, yeah. She's three steps ahead of everybody. Sure.
Possibly, you know, cauterized every little, you know, alleyway and, you know, corner to cut and this and that and make sure that, you know, everything stays away.
She's not a slouch lawyer. She knows that RICO statute upside down, backwards, and sideways. And she's generally that way with everything she touches.
There's an argument to say that's why Jack Smith had so many grand juries in different places. In case one fell through, he could move it there.
Good point.
I have faith in all these prosecutors, Fannie, Smith. They all know what they're doing. They're playing 3D Bagman, and he's trying to learn how to play checkers. I'm not too worried about it. I'm just let the system work its way out. I think we're on a good track. I really do.
Well, I think defense counsel know making cases just simply disappear before a jury even hears the evidence. There's a distaste for that in the criminal justice system.
Right.
You know, for ditching stuff on so-called technicalities. And the very idea that Mark Meadows or anyone else would go swanning into federal court and say, well, Judge, you gotta remove it from Fulton County because, well, sure, I tried to overturn the election in Georgia, but I was doing it in the course and scope of my duties. Bullshit. Nobody working in the federal government has an official duty of trying to subvert elections, and that is the nature of the charges. I mean, you would have to have somebody like that. That shit weasel Kaczmarek in Texas to rule like that.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
But, again, unreasonable delay is the purpose behind all of this. All of this. But, y'all, I got to get out of here. Steve, I'm glad you're there to restart the call because I am going to hang up because this little old iPad is simply not going to. Well, we're down to 20%, and I started at 100. Poor baby's old and tired. But the back porch will continue. I don't know. Once you start the call, will the button at head-on.live work? Do you know?
Yes. Everything works the same.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you popped in at the very end. It's nice to hear from you.
Good. How's
Miss Karen handling?
Loving retirement. Just got notice yesterday that her pension actually gets started next month. So, going without a check kind of sucked. But you know, it's the government. They overpaid her, which they did. You got to pay them back within 2 weeks. But when they owe you money, yeah, they just take their own sweet time about
it. Yeah, right. Yeah, they got to find an envelope, and then they got to find a stamp. And if it's anything like my studio here, you know, God damn it, where's an ink pen? Come on.
They don't get in any hurry, you know,
right.
That's for sure.
Oh, and by the way, before I do get out of here, Trump scared, Matt in San Francisco writes, I'm here for every demoralizing, pathetic, gradual fall from grace. I, for one, am not one of these people that think it's sad to see a former president arrested, booked, mugshotted. I'm thrilled to see it all, almost giddy with joy. I was sad and embarrassed for the country when he was in office. I'll wear a cheerleader outfit, hold pom-poms, and lead a cheer when he gets locked up. Matt, tell me where you're ordering. I'll get the matching one. Signed, Matt in San Francisco, Petty Princess. Well, I want to compete in the Petty Princess competition, Matt.
We've never been here in American history before.
Well, we've never had a president this fucking criminal before.
Exactly.
And this is the system working as the system is designed. I've talked about it in the past. I get so pissed off when I say, oh, we've got a constitutional crisis. No, the constitutional crisis happens when we don't do what the Constitution says we're supposed to do, which is kind of like the self-executing clause in the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment says that you should take Donald Trump off the goddamn ballot and probably about 150 members of the Maggot Caucus in the House of Representatives. Anybody who ever said that that the election was stolen or that Joe Biden isn't really the president is a participant in an insurrection. Boot their ass. So there's that. And wrapping up, Matt says, Fani, and by the way, just a general reminder, that's how she pronounces her name. It is Swahili. She's not Fanny like in Fanny Flag. She's Fani. Fani. Ah, Fani. A competent woman of color is not going to bring an indictment against a former president unless she knows she can win. And she's ready to go. Fuck around. Now let's find out. Hear, hear, Matt. Hear, hear. So that's it. Thanks, everybody. We took a bit of a bite out of the way-too-deep fundraising hole, and maybe over the weekend things will get better. I hope they do. I really hope they do. $165 finishes last Friday. That's how far behind we are. Unfunded for $165 a Friday, all of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and this program. And it gets a little scary sometimes. But thanks. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thanks to all our a la carte contributors. Thank you so very much indeed. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Hey, thanks so much for popping in, Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a comment for the algorithms wherever it is you download the podcast. It really means something. It helps a lot. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. COVID's here. It's not on its way back. It's here. With a nasty little mutation. If you can get a booster, get it. Even if it only provides partial protection, get it. Wear your mask when you're around the maggots for the obviously stated reasons. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. And if he comes waddling down the sidewalk at you saying,
hey, you want to buy some Trump panties?
Avoid Nitwit Nero like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.